This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Richard Bradbury and Arvind Uvaraj on Enterprise BizBytes.
Yeah, it's a Friday, so you know what that means. On BizBytes, we have feel-good stories for you to enjoy.
Well, I mean, look outside. I mean, it's almost sunny. It's not raining. Arvind, we're not too bad today, are we?
Yeah, we're not too bad. Should we go into our first story?
That's sure. About
cold storage and 7-Eleven, among some stores, moving to unified payment terminals this year. So this story comes from our lovely neighbours down in Singapore.
Don't we just love them?
Yeah, so 2,000 unified point-of-sale terminals will be installed at more than 650 stores belonging to the Dairy Farm Group Singapore this year. The retail group, in partnership with Nets, which is a network for electronic transfers, and a United Overseas Bank, which is UOB, will install the payment terminals at its cold storage marketplace. Jason's? Yeah.
What's Jason's?
I don't know. Never heard of it before.
Okay.
Yeah. Giant, 7-Eleven, and Guardian Health and Beauty stores, following a successful pilot at two stores last November, according to the press release by Dairy Farm and Nets on Thursday.
Arvind, I don't know about you, but I'd be a little bit worried about thinking that successful trials in two stores is enough to kind of get moving on a rollout on 2,000 terminals. Then again, this is Singapore we're talking about, right?
Yeah, so the unified POS system supports a comprehensive range of payment modes, Nets and Nets Flash, Flash Pay, Apple Pay, Android Pay, Samsung Pay, UOB Mighty Pay. I haven't heard of that either.
They all sound so very fancy.
Yeah, very fancy. And Easy Link, in addition to credit cards and debit cards, Dairy Farm's core brand card, which is the UOB Delight card, as well as its Tap for More loyalty program via the Passion card, also have been integrated into the system.
So we have the Delight card and the Passion card.
Yes.
These are all sounding a little bit dodgy to me.
A bit dodgy,
just
yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, this represents one of the largest deployments of unified point-of-sale terminals in Singapore, and the terminal is touted to enable a reduction of 9 to 11 seconds in the time needed at checkout counters. This represents productivity savings of 106 hours a day for all the stores. Wow. 9 to 11 seconds. It doesn't seem like a lot, but that's efficiency, right?
Yeah, that's super efficient. And this collaboration is also in line with the country's smart nation push to tap on technology to enable a cashless society. Specifically, it will accelerate the retail sector's transition from using paper-based instruments to adopting electronic platforms that promote efficiency and security. The press release said, it highlighted all of this. UOB's head of card and payments in Singapore, Chu Wan Sim, added that by the end of 2017, all the bank's POS terminals will be unified POS terminals.
I thought it was Friday and these were feel-good stories.
Yeah, but
right,
it got super deep and complicated.
It did for a little bit, yeah. Okay, moving on. We are still speaking about unified terminals and cashless payment methods. Apparently, the government of Rwanda and MasterCard have reaffirmed their shared commitment to the development of strong digital platforms to meet the needs of the country's citizens and work towards Rwanda's goal of promoting a cashless society. Thankfully, this is not Zimbabwe, where they're moving around with piles and piles and even
and
bags
of cash. Yeah. But speaking of super deep and complicated, we decided to cover this as our second story just to highlight how different regions around the world are embracing and quickly moving towards cashless payments. So according to Finscope 2016, 68% of adults in Rwanda use formal financial products and services. And there was a partnership agreement that was signed between MasterCard and the Rwanda Development Board at the World Economic Forum on Africa in Kigali back in 2016, which should have a significant impact on this number.
So they've named this initiative Sikashi.
Sikashi is a nice name.
It is, but I'm just glad I pronounced it right. And the project is focused on digitizing numerous state services to improve the efficiency and transparency of public services and ultimately promote the move to a cashless society, which is a pillar of Rwanda's broader Vision 2020. So they've got their own vision of, their own version of Wawasan 2020. To create a knowledge-based economy in a world beyond cash. The statement comes from Claire Akamanzi, the CEO of Rwanda Development Board and cabinet member.
Yeah, so let's talk about what Sikashi is all about. The key focus areas of Sikashi include school fees payment digitization, providing an online payment gateway services for Rwanda Online, contributing to the creation of an interoperable mobile banking platform addressing the national healthcare claims disbursement and payment processes and contributing to the effective management of foreign exchange process flow. It's basically an umbrella initiative, if you can call it that, to create a digital ecosystem for most of Rwanda's major financial gateways.
So the gateways are one thing, but it also covers a sort of centralized digital platform that drives efficiency and creates access to payments of the annual subscription fee of the communal healthcare system in Rwanda called the Mutuelle de Santé. So you can see how the healthcare and pension programs were all conceptualized as part of this Sikashi plot and will be the first to be rolled out to the country's citizens later this year.
Yeah, and this will be, you know, of course, followed by the introduction of the long-term savings scheme project, which MasterCard and the social enterprise called Pinbox Solutions partner to provide technical assistance for Rwanda's Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning. And the scheme will be demonstrated in the first global micro-pension inclusion summit in Rwanda in July.
Okay, so there's a nice workflow and process already in place here. Mm-hmm. Online payments gateway and mobile payments have been a key contributor to making government services more accessible to the country's citizens through a Rwanda online service called Irembo. Lovely name. And Irembo is the face of all current and future solutions and provides a one-stop shop for the Rwandan government and the country's citizens to apply and pay for government services.
Yeah, Irembo is actually pretty cool because it provides about 50 e-services from more than 10 government agencies to citizens, and it also allows them to pay using debit, credit, or, you know, prepaid cards and other mobile money services. So by building on the success of Irembo so far, MasterCard and Rwanda Online have kind of strengthened their relationship through the signing of a 2-year strategic partnership agreement to innovate around and around all these citizen to government or C2G and a business to government B2G payments.
Right, but here's the thing: Rwanda is a vital market in East Africa.
It is.
Important to highlight how they've put these processes in place to achieve a truly digital ecosystem by the time we get to 2020. It's a good plan, and they seem to have things all in the right place at the right time. We'll just have to see if they can keep this momentum and achieve this big goal. Here's the thing, though, Arvin. You know, I'm a bit of an old school guy, and I like having cash in my pocket, right? I mean, but here, now and then, where I'm out shopping or I'm out buying, particularly in a restaurant now, rarely am I putting my hand in my wallet to pull out cash. Is it the same with you?
It's the same. I mean, I prefer to have cashless payments because I don't draw that much money anymore because I just like to use my debit card. It's kind of when I go to a restaurant and they don't have card payments,
right,
it kind of turns me off. I'm like, you know, why don't you have a card payment system?
Get with it.
Yeah, right. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know who almost hit their goal, though, just like Rwanda? A bunch of fishers. Do you call them fishers? What do you call people behind phishing scams?
The fisher people?
Fisher people, fishermen.
Yeah. It's a good band name, though.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
These fishers, they posed as Google Docs requests yesterday and actually affected millions of users. We'll talk about that after the break. This is Enterprise BizBytes, BFM 89.9.
Business-filled minds, BFM 89.9.
You're still listening to Enterprise BizBytes with Rich and Arvin. Now, on Tuesday, we spoke about how Mac users may be facing their first real large-scale malware threat in the form of a Trojan called Doc.
And it was about time that they get, you know, they feel PC users' pain, right?
Don't say that, Arvin. It's a mean... I mean, poor Audrey sat here with her Mac out, and, you know, any minute now she might get some kind of virus. But we're speaking to her in a minute.
And a virus called Doc.
A Doc, yeah, right. So it's a story of a seemingly secure system being vulnerable to smarter forms of intrusion. Speaking of which, yesterday was rough for Google, and about a million of its users became because of a phishing email that reached about a million of its users in the form of a Google Docs permission prompt.
Yeah, so the scam claimed to come from Google Docs, which is a service that allows people to share and edit documents online. We use it a lot here in the office because it's super convenient.
And sometimes it has its problems connecting
it
every now and again.
It has its problems. Yeah, sometimes it freezes. And it allows for a bunch of people to work on the same document at the same time. So we don't exactly know how these fishers managed to disguise themselves so well as a legitimate Google Docs request. But a lot of people fell for it and were hit by the scam. So basically, users who clicked on a link and then followed instructions risk giving the hackers access to their email accounts.
So luckily, Google said it had stopped these attacks within approximately an hour, right? including through these removing fake pages and applications. So I guess that's good that they responded very quickly and shut the scam down.
Yeah.
But the fact that it could infect about a million users in the span of an hour, that's pretty disturbing.
Yeah, because imagine if Google didn't get the memo, you know, earlier on or something. Yeah. So here's how this works. So basically, during the attack, users were sent a deceptive invitation to edit a Google Doc with the subject line stating that a contact has shared a document on Google Docs with you. That's usually how the message, you know, goes for people who get people who get someone to share the Google Doc with
them. Yeah.
So there's nothing to be suspicious about, and you wouldn't expect anyone to think twice about it unless they're not regular Google Doc users. So what was suspicious, though, is there was an email address attached to it, and it was HHH. How many H's have I covered?
That was 9 about there, yeah.
Yeah, so there were 16 H's at Mailinator.com.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was copied into the message. Mailinator, which is a free email service provider, has denied any involvement.
I suppose when you're looking through your contact list and, you know, you think to yourself, I've not heard from HHH in a while.
Yeah, you know. What kind of a friend is he?
Exactly. He's not emailed me very recently, and now he's asking me to share a doc.
Like, it's been 6 months, but it might have been a H with 15 H's.
Right. Yeah, it's completely different person. Though.
Yeah, it's his brother.
That's right. Anyway, but Google says that while contact information was accessed and used by the campaign, their investigations show that no other data was exposed, and they also confirm that users don't have to take any further action regarding this event, and that the threat has been laid to rest. Mm-hmm. But of course, if you want to be super safe and review third-party apps connected to your account, you can always visit the Google Security Checkup.
Yeah, and I guess this is another example of how people need to be very, very cautious online, even though the services that they're using look completely secure. I mean, you wouldn't expect Google to be vulnerable to an attack like this, but with all their layers of security, but as long as there are people with malicious intentions out there who are looking for cracks in the system, then users need to be extra careful on anything and everything that they do online.
Right. It's the case of a lot of people don't know how the technology works, particularly if they're new or they're older. You know, people who are not...
Yep.
My mother in particular is one of these people who is quite not tech savvy, quite the opposite. But she would just click buttons, you know, and she would just keep clicking and clicking. Mm-hmm. And at the end, she had like her taskbar, I think, had something like 40 or 50 different apps attached to it that are all taking some kind of data or anything. You know, it's just taking advantage of people who don't know any better.
Especially if you allow access to all your other apps that you have on your phone or your PC.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so lucky for Google was extremely fast with their response and recovery, and the damage was way less than what it could have been if this had been allowed to reach more people. Anyway, we're after a short break again, and when we come back, we'll be talking about 20 of the highest paid heads of state in the world. Exciting stuff. Stick around for that. This is BizBytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
This is EBB with Arvin and Rich. Okay, as promised, it's time to find out how much some of our world leaders are being paid. And when it comes to things like this, politics and money, who else better to give you a rundown of all these things than our very own Audrey Raj?
Thanks, Rich. You make me sound like a money-grabbing MP. Money and politics, but yes. Yes, this is my kind of thing. My years being a broadcast journalist on the news team has left me fascinated with these politicians, and so this is my kind of story.
Yeah, but I'm not really into politics, but this one has piqued my interest too. So if like you've ever wondered how good or how bad some politicians have it, we now have the answers for you. Here's the list of 20 highest paid heads of states according to Yahoo Finance Singapore.
Okay, so we'll start off at like number 20 and move all the way to number 1.
Okay, that works for me.
Keep the suspense going, right? So at number 20 is Juha Sipilä, who is the president of Finland, and he earns about $153,000 a month. A year. So this is just under $13,000 a month.
US dollars a month?
Yes, US dollars a month.
Okay, and he's at number 20?
And he's at number 20.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we move on to Gudni Johansson. He's the president of Iceland. His salary is about $156,000 a year. Theresa May, the prime minister of the UK, her salary is $185,000 to $186,000 a year. So that that's about 15k a month. Right?
Local elections yesterday in the UK. Maybe her wages may have changed after yesterday's results. We'll see.
You will see. So then you've got at number 17, Erna Solberg, the Prime Minister of Norway, earns about 187,000 a year. François Hollande, President of France, earned about 194,000 a year last year. Okay, then you've got Mark Rutte, Prime Minister of the Netherlands. He earned about 195,000 last year. Ender Kenny, the Taoiseach of Ireland. I don't know how to pronounce this word.
But none of us did, Audrey. None of, we tried, right?
It's spelled T-A-O-I-S-E-A-C-H, but it's pronounced Taoiseach.
Or something along those lines.
Yeah.
If you do speak Celt, please do let us know, you know.
200,000 a year. Then, of course, at number 13, Shinzo Abe, the Prime Minister of Japan, he earns about 17,000 a month. That sums up to 203,000 a year.
What about somebody like Angela Merkel? How much does she earn?
Angela Merkel is at number 9. Okay. Ooh. And so she's, of course, the Chancellor of Germany. She earns about 235,000 a year. That's just under 20K a month.
Right.
Okay. So let's just move on. Let's fast forward down the list, right?
Give us the juicy ones, you know, the ones that we know.
Fine. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, handsome man. I'm female. Come on. 253,000 last year. That's about 21,000 a month. Closer to home, the Prime Minister of Australia, Malcolm Turnbull, he earned 385,000 last year, which is about 32,000 a month.
I mean, that's double pretty much Juha Sipilä, right?
Yeah, Juha Sipilä.
Juha Sipilä, I apologize.
Yes, yes.
And now we're going to everyone's favorite.
Yes, Donald Trump is at number 4. Mm-hmm. So he earns $400,000 a year.
From his salary as a president.
As a president, which he initially said that he was not going to take.
He said he was going to donate most of it or something, didn't he?
We'll just have to see. But we really don't know what he does with his money.
No, I don't think anybody really knows what he does with his money. Okay, let's move on to the big guns then. The top two, who have we got?
At number 3 first was President of Switzerland. Plenty of money there, 401,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And then at number 2 is the Chief Executive of Hong Kong, Leung Chun Ying. He earned about 578,000 last year. That's about just under 50K a month.
We're in the wrong jobs, you know.
We are.
Totally in the wrong jobs.
We should totally be like a head of state.
Right? Because it's that easy. All right. So
please, boys.
We're at number 1 then, aren't we?
Okay, at number 1. Really, really close to home, but not home. The Prime Minister of Singapore, Lee Hsien Loong, he earns $1.7 million a year. That's about 140,000 a month.
Oh my word.
The jump between 1 and 2, the difference between 1 and 2 is huge.
It's about 4 times. So Lee Hsien Loong earns about 4 times what the chief executive of Hong Kong earns.
Yeah.
Do we know why? Do we know why?
Singapore is awesome. I can't believe I just said that. But
you did. On live radio some more.
A lot of Malaysians are going to need aloe vera for that burn.
Yeah, and it's also interesting to note that Lee Hsien Loong earns almost as much every month as Juha Sipilä, who was at number 20, the president of Finland, earns every year.
Right.
Yeah, so...
So... Yeah.
You know, so that being said, they do make considerably less than the average Fortune 500 CEO.
True.
So that's important to take note. And still, many would say that politicians make too much.
Well, looking at this list, I'm inclined to agree. Wouldn't you? Mm. Interestingly, that we don't see anybody close to home. Right? I'd be surprised.
Yeah, well, but if you look at it, right, if Juha Sipilä earns about $13,000 a month, that means if any one of our politicians were to be in that top 20 list, they'd have to earn, like, Malaysian ringgit about 60K a month. And that seems quite a bit because even, like, Lee Hsien Loong earns, he earns about 143K a month. So.
Wow. Okay, so what kind of career should you embark on if all you care about is the money? Well, we now know that a career in politics may not be as lucrative as we thought. Just excuse your Mugabes and your Suartos and your Marcoses, you know.
Who most probably saved all their lives the money. That
right?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
And that money would have been passed on to their children. Anyway, what kind of line should we be getting to for the moolah then?
Well, the key word here is skill. So you've got a skill-based job that will take you far. So let's look at the top 10 highest-paying careers. years. Starts off at number 10. If you're a pharmacist, you most probably earn about $121,000 a year. This is all American figures taken in 2015 because we don't have 2016 figures just yet. So you're about to earn about $121,000 a year if you're a pharmacist.
You don't expect a pharmacist to earn that much. I don't know why.
You're going to have skills, though. You're going to have very important skills.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. You know, to become a pharmacist, you require a postgraduate degree. Also, as more people gain access to medication through increased health coverage, pharmacists are growing in demand.
So. True.
Also, if you're an air traffic controller, you know, that's a really specialized skill and a very high stress job. So, you know, that pays well to about $122,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Then if you move down the list, you've got data scientists and orthodontists, petroleum engineer with, you know, how oil and gas is.
I mean, I have friends here who studied architecture, did really well in architecture. Some friend came along and said, I can get you a job in oil and gas. Boom, off they went.
Of course, because the money is good.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But it all depends on what crude is that too, you know, because if... It all depends on the oil market.
Yeah,
so
true.
Up and down there. Yeah. So the top, just before the top three of highest paying careers, you've got the C-suite heroes. All your CEOs are at number four. This is where the world's highest paid people can be found. And you know, because like running an organization is high stress and you've got to deal with all sorts of challenges. So you probably earn at about $170,000 a year. And the projected job growth rate is at about 11% over the next 10 years. So if you're thinking in advance and maybe becoming a CEO is not a bad thing.
It seems a bit odd. I don't know why. But at number four, C-suite heroes, it looks like the ones that have more skills, like the ones above, like air traffic controllers, should be higher on the list.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because they need a lot more skills.
A lot more stressful as well.
A lot more stressful, yeah. Like, especially air traffic controller, because all these airplanes and their timings and their schedules, they're like lives that depend on that
absolutely.
Person.
Yeah.
Well, speaking about jobs that, you know, your lives depend on, they're in the top three. So you've got your GP at number three, your general practice physicians, and then you've got your psychiatrist at number two.
Mm-hmm.
And at number one, you have your surgeons. So surgeons earn about $350,000 a year. I'm talking about US dollars with a 10-year projected growth rate at 18%. So...
Surgeon, I'm completely okay with. Yeah, I can completely understand because it takes a lot of skill to do something like that. It's not just steady hands, right?
No, it's not just steady hands. I mean, you spend a lot of time at school.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to do, is it 10 years at medical school or something ridiculous like that?
And 7 years at med school and then another 5 years
to be a surgeon. 4 or 5 years, something
else.
Wow, I mean, it's about the investment as well.
And you know, the pressure every time you walk into the OT.
I could never do that.
The pressure and how you have to keep that pressure at bay when you go in there because someone's depending on you.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
But still coming back.
Okay.
You know, if you want that high paying job, go visit our neighbors in Singapore. And, you know, if you ever get to be the head of state there, you're looking at 1.7 mil.
That's just an insane amount of money.
Mm.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Audrey Raj, for that.
Yeah, so, you know, just we're about to head into another break. But when we come back, we have a story on the ocean cleanup raising some $20 million in donations. But first, here's BDI with Millionaire. How apt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Enterprise Biz Bites, BFM 89.9.
Break from midfield, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with...
Arvind Yuvaraj.
We've got one more story lined up, but before we move into our final story, we're giving away 10 tickets to the BFM Enterprise Rocks event, BFM's first ever retail conference on Monday, May the 15th at Nexus Convention Centre at Bangsar South. To win a pair of tickets, just answer this question correctly. When is Enterprise Rocks happening? A, on the 15th of May, or B, the 15th of July? All you need to do is send the correct answer, your name and your IC number, to 016-201-9000. Now, finally, onto our final story of the day.
Yeah, so plastic floating around in our oceans has been a problem for a considerable amount of time, and the issue is only getting worse as we consume more and more plastic. In fact, there's so much floating around that some of it can be used to map ocean currents. Have you heard of the friendly floaties?
Yes.
Yeah, so, well, they're
friendly. Yes, I did. did kind of.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. Same kind of-ish. And the friendly floaties were a bunch of plastic toys that were part of a consignment that was sailing from Hong Kong to Washington in January of 1992. A storm managed to wash and knock one of these containers, and 29,000 plastic ducks, turtles, beavers, and frogs were washed overboard. So to this day, this floatism is used to track currents around the world.
So we've got a whole bunch of plastic ducks and other animals floating around.
Yeah, and telling us what the current is like.
It's a great... I mean, as horrible as it is that we have plastic floating around, mm-hmm. it's kind of cute that there are plastic ducks telling us this, right?
Exactly. It's like a big bathtub.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so whilst this may benefit some of the world scientists, of course, there are people trying to clean up the oceans using their own methods. The Ocean Cleanup, it's a Dutch foundation. They're developing advanced technologies to rid the oceans of plastic. And today they announced that they've successfully raised $21.7 million US dollars in donations since last November. Now, this latest funding round brings the Ocean Cleanup's total funding since 2013 to $31.5 million US dollars. And the new contribution allows the Ocean Cleanup to initiate large-scale trials of its cleanup technology in the Pacific Ocean later this year.
Yeah, so while this might seem like a large amount, it's nothing to be sneered at. Cleaning the Hudson River took over $1 billion. And
right.
10 years ago. And it took 10 years. So, you know, and you would still not be able to call
it's exactly not clean. Right, and the Pacific Ocean, as we know, is huge.
Yeah.
Right. So this funding round is led by San Francisco-based philanthropists Mark and Lynn Benioff. Mm-hmm. You might know them as the people behind Salesforce. And another anonymous donor. See, who's got this amount of money that they can just go, you know, just take a few million?
I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people.
It could be a Singaporean politician, mm-hmm. perhaps. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
No, he wouldn't be donating, would he? Anyway, other supporters include the Julius Baer Foundation, Royal DSM, and Silicon Valley entrepreneur investor Peter Thiel.
Yeah, so over the past 4 years, the Ocean Cleanup has been developing a passive plastic capturing technology, which is pretty cool. I've seen this on YouTube a bunch of times, and it looks like simple technology.
Right.
I don't know how long it would have took him to actually come up with the concept. It basically uses the ocean currents to catch and concentrate the plastic, reducing the theoretical cleanup time of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, as it's called, from a whole millennia to just a few years, or, you know, I'm not sure how many years, it doesn't say. They hope to launch their first experimental cleanup system in the Pacific waters by late 2017, and it will represent the most important milestone on the road to the full-scale cleanup of the world's oceans.
Great start, though. Mm-hmm. So details of this project and the start of the cleanup will be shared with 3,000 supporters at an event held on Thursday, May the 11th in Utrecht in the Netherlands. And that will be followed by a media Q&A as well. So the guy has actually said, his name is Boyan Slat. Mm-hmm. He said, Lynn and I are, this is the other investor. Lynn and I are thrilled to support the Ocean Cleanup's important goal of eliminating plastic in our oceans, said Mark Benioff, chairman and CEO of Salesforce, as we just mentioned. With Boyan's innovative leadership, I believe the Ocean Cleanup will have an incredibly positive impact on the future of our oceans. I hope other leaders will join us in supporting these efforts.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Boyan Slat, founder and CEO of the Ocean Cleanup, stated that our mission is to rid the oceans, the world's oceans, of plastic, and this support is a major leap forward towards achieving this goal. Thanks to the generous support of these funders, the day we'll be returning that first batch of plastic to shore is now in sight. Boyan, it should be stated, founded the Ocean Cleanup in 2013 when he was just an 18-year-old kid. Now the company employs approximately 65 engineers and researchers.
Okay.
18 years old.
Dude, what are we doing? See, we've already said this once already. We can't say we're in the wrong career.
Mm-hmm.
Either we're going to be a politician or we're going to be a scientist, young entrepreneurial kid at 18.
Yeah, but what were you doing when you were 18? I was planning on which movie to watch a bunch of times.
Yeah, I was probably thinking about which pizza I wanted to order or something.
Yeah, same. So I was planning on which pizza to get to which movie.
Right, yeah.
To smuggle into the cinema.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Anyway, not that we were criminals in our youth or anything. Just quickly add that.
No.
Right, almost time for us to wrap up. But before we do that, so in preparation for full-scale deployment, the Ocean Cleanup organized several expeditions to map the plastic pollution problem in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch with unprecedented detail. Meanwhile, the team has advanced its design through a series of rapid iteration scaling up tests, followed by a 100-meter prototype that was deployed on the North Sea in June of 2016. I think you mentioned this earlier on, Arvin, actually, outside the studio.
Yeah.
So the next step will be to launch and deployment of the Pacific Pilot sometime later this year.
Yeah, so that was about it for the Ocean Cleanup project. It's pretty cool. I mean, he's so young and he has so much passion for this.
Yeah.
And if you watch him on YouTube and doing the bunch of interviews, then you can see how diligent he is.
Right.
And how he has like put all his efforts and his time into cleaning up the oceans. He's genuinely passionate about, you know, getting through with this. We've come to the end of our show. And at the end of every show, we like to highlight the stories that we've covered on today's episode. We started out with Cold Storage and 7-Eleven stores in Singapore having unified payment terminals this year. More specifically, 2,000 unified point of sale or POS terminals will be installed at more than 650 stores belonging to the Dairy Farm Group Singapore this year.
Then we moved into a story on how now Rwanda wants to move into a completely cashless economy that's in line with their Vision 2020 goals. They've partnered up with MasterCard to design a proper workflow that connects all major payment gateways and services to kickstart this cashless initiative.
Mm-hmm. And then we spoke about a very distressing story on a phishing scam that posed as a Google Docs invite. And it looked so legit that a million people bought into the scam and thought that it was real. Luckily, Google was able to neutralize the threat within an hour, and they say nothing else needs to be done from the user's side of things.
After that, we had a very interesting rundown. Thank you to Audrey Raj, of course, mm-hmm. of the 20 highest paid heads of state. And we got into the nitty gritty of who earns how much and how they rank in the list. It's a very interesting rundown. So if you missed that, you should get the BFM app, of course, and stream the podcast.
Yeah, which is, of course, available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. And lastly, we spoke about how something called the Ocean Cleanup has raised about $21.7 million in donations to start the Pacific Cleanup trials. Now, this is a real feel-good story because of how, like I said, how diligent this group has been about cleaning up the oceans. And if you saw the kind of junk that gets thrown out there, you'd want to get down there and help them out in their mission as well.
All right. Next up, then, it's the Breakfast Grill replay. This the morning runs. Tan Chung Han spoke to Go Su Singh, Managing Director of Bon Estates, about the economy and the cost of doing business in the high-end segment of the property market.
Mm-hmm. That's coming up right after the 1 p.m. news bulletin. It's now time for us to say goodbye. So, raise your lighters and wave it from side to side. No, we'll be back next week. From Richard Bradbury and myself, Arvind Yuvaraj, here's wishing you a lovely weekend ahead. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.